I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Still no plausible explanation about the takeover of I-5 in Seattle. Plus,
you don't think that's vandalism?
Multiple public school teachers documented committing criminal acts of unrest. And the House GOP leader gives a masterclass on delivering a legislative speech.
I hope that we have the honesty to admit when we were wrong and the humility to be willing to try new approaches.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. The chief of the Washington State Patrol says they did their best when it came to protesters shutting down the most important stretch of interstate in the state of Washington for hours on end. And I am sorry, Chief Batiste, but if that is your best is not good enough. And we have examples we'll show momentarily about other places that handled similar situations much better than we did here. I would also say to the Chief of the State Patrol that, I mean, I would assume you're coming toward the end of your career. You've been in your position for a very long time. We're going to have a new governor soon. To think that that new governor isn't going to appoint a new head of the State Patrol is ridiculous. So if you're going to take lumps for Governor Inslee, that is not worth it. If that's what you're doing, is trying to help hedge whatever sort of political hit that the governor is taking from all of this, don't do it. That's not worth your dignity. And that's what I'm seeing here. It's what I saw in the response that the Washington State Patrol sent out from their press team over the weekend. It's what I'm seeing, and we'll get to the Como News article in a moment. But as I said on the show yesterday, you know, we're talking about not just a failure at one point in time when we look at what happened on I-5 in Seattle over the weekend, which, by the way, was right at the exit to the most important trauma center in the state of Washington. I mean, we saw in the backup ambulances that were rendered out of service because they could not get through the backup. So the seriousness of this can't be understated. Not to mention that those people have no right in the world to stop the traveling public, to dictate to every single person sitting in those cars that whatever they're doing is not important as the issue that those pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas demonstrators are there to rally in support of. And would I say that this didn't happen in just a point of time? This has been a gradual free pass that these sorts of activists have been given for a long time. And I detailed on the show yesterday how it's like if you give a mouse a cookie, you let him shut down a Christmas tree lighting, they're emboldened. You let him shut down a bridge, they're emboldened. You let him take over six square blocks of a city, they're emboldened. Why would they not believe that they can take over an interstate? So when I say that the Washington State Patrol, if they truly did their best is not good enough. Here is what Chief Batiste told Como News. Our folks did the best they could with the tools, resources, and personnel they had available and used the time needed to resolve the situation peacefully. Look, you know I'm supportive of law enforcement. I don't know everything that was taking place behind the scenes. What I do know is we've had a political class and one-party rule in the state of Washington that has emboldened activists to this point, where law enforcement is even faced with a situation where you've got hundreds of protesters blocking the interstate who are there because they believe, rightfully so, that they won't get in trouble. It is that political environment that voters have allowed, that politicians have fostered. It is that environment that put your troopers, Chief, in that situation in the first place, to be stuck in a no-win. There's no win for them. They go in, they effect arrests, well, then they're vilified. Lump that on to all the other reasons they're vilified. They don't do anything, then they're deemed incompetent. And I'll tell you, Chief, that although I don't know the conversations that happened between you and the governor or you and any other politician, if there were any, which I'm hoping that there were, what I do know is that you should be saying something about the political environment that allows for this. To say, our folks did the best they could with the tools, resources, and personnel. They don't have the tools they need because as I said on the show yesterday, they've been absolutely neutered when it comes to dealing with activists. They don't have the resources that they need. There are far few troopers. There are far few police officers in this state. If they call on other agencies for help, you think Seattle police have the number of officers they need to break away from what they're doing, 700 officers down, and send reinforcements that your troopers need to the level that they need? Of course not. Neither do any of the other surrounding agencies, because Washington State has the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation because of the political environment. So they didn't have the tools they needed. They didn't have the resources they needed. They didn't have the personnel they needed. And it all boils down to the political environment and what has been tolerated. And as the chief of the Washington State Patrol, someone who has been in that position for a very long time, who, again, I'm not going to make assumptions, but I don't think will be in that position much longer when a new governor comes on board and is going to want to appoint someone of their own, you really don't have anything to lose by speaking the truth. And by standing up for the men and women of your agency and for the men and women of other police departments in this state by just saying what needs to be said. Politicians have allowed this environment. Politicians have emboldened activists to believe that they can do this and get away with it because we've allowed them. And to not say that does a disservice to the law enforcement officers who are out there who were put in a very difficult position. And the more people who stay silent and who won't point out the obvious here that this is, we've given mice cookies for far too long, you just allow it to continue. Because someone like me can say it, right? But do you think Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson care what I have to say? No, they look at what I have to say and they're like, oh, she just doesn't like us. She just doesn't think we're good public servants. But if you've got rational Democrats, law enforcement officers, the governor's own chief of the patrol, who's saying, look, we have to take a harder line. Governor, you need to say something. You know, call the governor in Houston. Hey, I know you're about to enjoy the football game, but we've got a serious situation on I-5. You need to come out and say something, please. Do it for the men and women of the state patrol. Do it for the men and women of the Seattle Police Department. Do it for the traveling public. Do it for the people who might be having medical emergencies who can't get to Harborview Medical Center. There is power in your position, and I hate to see it used this way, in a statement that, in my estimation, beats around the bush. All right, to give an example of, I think, how this could have been handled better, not to say that New York City has handled all the unrest involving these pro-Palestine activists perfectly, but there was a really good example of this. So activists went out, very similar to what happened in Seattle, and they blocked the Holland Tunnel during morning traffic. So literally preventing people from getting on and off the island. And what happened? Well, NYPD is like, well, we're going to arrest you. So they sat all these people down and they put handcuffs on them.
NYPD, KKK, ID under all the same. NYPD, KKK, ID.
Yeah. What is he saying? Can you play that again?
NYPD, KKK, ID.
NYPD, KKK, IDF, they're all the same. Oh, so the NYPD is the same as the KKK, is the same as the Israel Defense Forces. These people are winners, I'm telling you what. There was also this moment, so they sat them down, handcuffed. That's what you need to do. And this is what they want. And I think that's also what the State Patrol or Chief Batiste maybe does or does not realize, or Governor Inslee does or does not realize. They want to be arrested. These people, and we'll talk about one of them, I mean, they've been arrested in acts of civil unrest before. They are there because they want to have pictures of themselves, videos of themselves being handcuffed, because not only do they want to say that they were martyrs for their cause, but they also want to say that, oh, the police manhandled me. And they want to then bitch about the police. Can I say bitch? Yeah, I can say that. Female dog.
Yep.
Okay.
I say it's fine.
Swear jar clean. That's what they want. They have no other meaning to their life. That's why they just pick whatever goes against the grain at any point in time, whatever it might be. Same people for 15 years in Seattle. They find their little pet thing they're going to protest about that year and they go and do it. And they do it in the most disruptive way possible. They can film themselves doing it. They can put it on Twitter of themselves doing it. They can say that they're just way more, they're so sanctimonious. I mean, they're just way more woke than the rest of us. And then on top of all of that, when they do something illegal, when they do something dangerous, they then want to be able to complain about how police responded to it. So give them what they want. If you're already going to give them what they want by letting them take over the freeway completely unfettered, Then put some cuffs on them. Let them take pictures for the gram. And then let everybody else move on with their freaking lives. But I gotta say, in this New York situation, the Holland Tunnel, oh, I wish we had 1 million of this man. I wish we had at least 100 of this guy in Seattle to confront these protesters. So just to set it up, you know, they're blocking like a path to Brooklyn. So there's obviously, I mean, you're really making life difficult for people who need to get across the Holland Tunnel. So this dad, he's got a daughter he needs to get to in Brooklyn. He's black, which I know this will come as a surprise to everyone. The vast majority of these pro-Palestine protesters are just like woke, white, mid-aged, I don't want to say middle-aged, but like 30s, 40s, white, woke, progressive women, right? Does that surprise anyone? So what are they going to do when they're confronted with a black guy who they're supposed to be like, oh, you know, we're bow down to the equity issue. And then he's like, move, you guys are ridiculous.
You're disrupting traffic, idiots. You can't do that. That's against the law.
Love the people chanting, run them over. Now, I don't condone running them over because that's probably going to get you just put away. But they let him through. I will say, though, if that does not illustrate the narcissism at play here, the absolute narcissism of these woke, white, progressive women who are like, oh, our cause is so important that we're going to keep this black dad from getting to his daughter in Brooklyn. And, he gets out of his car and he pushes them. And again, I don't recommend that because you do anything against activists, they're going to cause a stir and tell you're the one who ends up in handcuffs and you're the one who goes to prison because they're certainly not going to go to prison. But I don't blame him. And I'm sure there are a bunch of people in that backup in Seattle who want to do the same dang thing. I also saw, and I know we're working to get him, Nicole, there was an attorney who came out, I think he was on Ari Hoffman's show, who said, you would have a civil case here. He thinks that some people who were caught in the backup in Seattle should sue these activists. And if you can identify some of them, which actually coming up in the next segment, we know at least one of them by name. I'm not saying that these activists are going to have an awful lot of money for you to actually collect on the gains from whatever lawsuit that you might have.
I don't know. The Seattle teachers, they do all right.
Well, you could, that's what needs to happen, right? If law enforcement is not going to do its job because it's handcuffed by politicians, which I do believe is the case here, then private citizens need to take it into their own hands and they need to sue the pants off these activists personally. And once that starts happening and once they are left absolutely destitute, they'll stop doing what they're doing. Because there's only, I know that a lot of them, they're living off, you know, their parents' meatloaf in the basement, right? So maybe they can, you know, count on mom and dad for funds for some period of time. But not for everything. So I really think that might be the only way out of this, is you got to sue him personally. So we're working to get that attorney on to talk about, okay, what is the legal argument there? But man, if there's some people caught in that backup who think that might just be the ticket. The other thing I'll note, I said on the show yesterday, I don't know how they're going to, you know, the State Patrol came out in an initial statement and says, you know, they didn't just get off scot-free. We're working to identify the people who organized this and who, you know, committed criminal acts. And I'm thinking, you let them walk off the interstate. You didn't arrest them. How are you going to do that? One caveat to that is apparently they towed the cars that were left behind, because that's how this initial stoppage happened, is they brought cars on the interstate. They stopped those vehicles and then people came in through a hole in the fence and filled the area. So it sounds like they towed some of those vehicles off. So if those were their cars and not stolen vehicles, which I wouldn't rule out, then you should be able to identify the person who owns the vehicle and try to find out who was there. But it's tough because it's similar to a hit and run. Why hit and runs are so difficult to solve is if somebody hits and runs and then they go home, they can always say, well, I wasn't driving. Mm-hmm. And you have to actually be able to prove that they were in the car and that a friend didn't borrow it or whatever.
Right. Hopefully there's some video of it because they're very proud of themselves. So they videotape themselves all the time.
So proud. Keep those videos coming out.
Right. We actually had somebody, Erica, in our chat just said that she had a medical emergency and couldn't get to care. She emailed Mike Falk and he blamed Washington State Patrol and made her feel like the idiot. So I told her to forward that on over to us.
Oh, forward that to us.
And probably contact this lawyer.
Oh my gosh. Like, let's give it a try. Yeah. I mean, I hate to tell you, sue someone because it's a hard decision to make personally. But if you've got an attorney who wants to maybe take it on pro bono, sometimes
and
attorneys
if you
like that
didn't get medical care that you needed.
Right.
It's
obnoxious. And I hope you're okay. But send us that information. I'd like to see what Mike Falk, who's a spokesperson for the governor's office, said to you. But a lot of these types of attorneys, they'll take on your case, and you only pay them if you win.
Right.
So it might be something worthy of, let's track down some of these activists.
I don't like to sue everybody for everything, but if that is the only way to bring change
right.
to this obnoxious behavior, then so be it.
Utterly obnoxious. Yeah. And it's not some frivolous claim.
No.
You were stopped in your tracks for hours on end. To your assertion, you had a medical emergency and you couldn't get help. They were blocking the on-ramp to the exit to Harborview Medical Center. And it's just ridiculous to me, and maybe private lawsuits are the way around this, because apparently we have no political will. And I hate to be so hard on the chief of the patrol. You know, again, I'm very supportive of law enforcement. I recognize that a lot of this is hands tied. But, you know, one of the things that I'll say is you had, during the pandemic, law enforcement officers being fired over lack of vaccine. And there were a lot of chiefs, sheriffs, chief of the patrol. That was a moment to say, hey, these are dedicated public servants. We cannot be firing them. But because they're so beholden to politicians and they're worried about their own jobs, they don't do it. And I know it's easy for me to sit here and say, well, you know what? Take one for the team. Speak up. And if they fire you, then you're a martyr for the men and women of your department who put their lives on the line every single day. I know it's easy for me to say that. But at some point, if you're going to be owned by a politician, are you really in the job still for the right reasons? Are you really doing the job that you and your heart wanted to do when you signed up for public service? That would be my question.
In that Cuomo piece, he mentioned also that they had got some warnings that it might happen, but they didn't know how to make sure or like
they didn't know if they were it wasn't whatever. Detailed enough for them to act
right.
on it. But to that
should
I think
you not
is,
be ready anyway. We know this is coming.
Right.
It's happening everywhere.
I would also say these people post everything on social media.
Yes.
And clearly it was organized enough where hundreds of people showed up not only on the freeway but also on the overpass. You're telling me they had a way, some secret way to communicate through hundreds of people to orchestrate this and we didn't know about it? Well, God forbid there's a freaking terror attack because we're going to be absolutely blindsided by it. If all these low IQ people, sorry, is that mean? But this is ridiculous. If all of these, I'm going to take that back. Maybe they're smart. I don't know. They're not acting smart. Is that fair?
Yes.
If the basement dwellers can figure this out, the terrorists can figure it out too. So, I mean, for the love, let's get our intelligence efforts together.
Maybe those poet officers, and some of them are officers, but some of them are just community. They say they're just assembled by these community engagement people.
Yeah, they're not
so
like
not
armed
all of them are officers,
law enforcement
right?
officers.
But maybe those people should be monitoring these websites where these people are communicating and planning these things and be ready for this stuff.
Right. I mean, and also the key is, and we'll move on. The key is don't let them on the interstate in the first place.
Right.
There has to be a concerted effort to stop that from happening. And I understand that means you know about it ahead of time. But these people, they do flyers for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they that's how they communicate on social media, on X. It just shocks me that we do not have any sort of, I mean, all the government surveillance in the world, and you didn't know that a few hundred anarchists were planning to go out and block a major highway. That's kind of terrifying, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, coming up next, two teachers were caught on video committing criminal acts of unrest, what is going to happen to them? We'll reveal their identities, but also talk about the Seattle Public School District's response to this, which is infuriating. But first, so we have been looking at a couple things as we head into 2024. It's an election year. So that means there's going to be a lot of misinformation out there from both sides, frankly, when it comes to trying to change public opinion and push narratives. That's really concerning when it comes to your finances. You're going to be led to believe the economy is just fine, when in reality, it is not just fine. We talked to Zach Abraham about that quite a bit. And he said that really, in an election year, you do have to tread lightly when it comes to what you're hearing from politicians and what you might be hearing in the news, because you really can't know whether to trust it.
It's a tricky game, but we want to keep at least one foot on the wagon until we reach that part. But we're looking for that bump in the road going, all right, guys, get ready to jump, get ready to jump. And people are like, oh, you're trying to time the market. Sort of, because when inflation becomes the issue and the government is willing to print ad infinitum, the minute they crank that printing press up again, they're going to push everything back up, right? So they're kind of making you time the market in a way. So we're not trying to do that. That's one of the reasons we have a good amount of a ton of money in short-term bonds piled up right now. The stocks we do own are very rock solid dividend type paying stocks. And I just think it's time to really collect some good income here and see the way things play out, because this is just not a market that is offering a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line, tread lightly in an election year. You don't know what you're going to be fed, and especially if you're getting close to retirement, managing your risk is absolutely critical. Zach talks about this all the time on his weekly radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. You can also learn about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy, how they're protecting retirement portfolios against loss as we speak. All right, before we move on to these two Seattle public school teachers caught in the act of criminal unrest, I've been called out in the comments that because I didn't say the B word in the context of talking about a female dog, that I owe the swear jar money, which is fine.
You're allowed to on radio and TV.
That's fine. You know what? If you guys want to be purists about my cursing, it's going to a good cause eventually, so that's fine. I'll give money to the swear jar today.
We do have a major announcement coming with that good cause when we, remember?
We have a major announcement?
Yes.
I do not know what you're talking about. Mute our mics for a sec.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, yeah, don't tease that. We don't even know if it's official.
Oh, it is. I've talked to him. It's going to be official. Oh,
what a tease Nicole is. Okay, yeah. That will be cool when we announce it with our good charity of the year. Anyway, Okay, two Seattle public school teachers, surprise of the century, caught in acts of criminal vandalism. So one of them, there was this video out. I'll just play it quick because it's our friend Jonathan Cho for Turning Point USA. He was collecting some video. This is, remember the Starbucks roastery up on Capitol Hill was vandalized. So he went up to a woman who was vandalizing it.
Hard to kind of tell that.
You don't think that's vandalism? What you're doing?
No, not at all.
It's not vandalism?
Not at all.
Boycott Bucks and the occupation now. Okay.
What does the world think?
Okay.
I mean, not anarchy. I mean communism.
He's a communist. I'm more of an anarchist.
How you doing?
Okay. Anyway, so. she's writing in there, and boycott Starbucks and the occupation now. What is Starbucks going to do about Gaza? Kind of confused there, but Starbucks is like their perpetual target. And it's kind of sad that this beautiful Starbucks roastery building on Capitol Hill always has to be boarded up. It's constantly boarded up. It's this beautiful building, really cool place. But it's always boarded up because they always target it for vandalism, broken windows, graffiti, whatever it is. So anyway, that video goes out. Cho puts it out. The internet does its thing and identifies this as Lauren Holloway, a Seattle Public School's special education teacher. God forbid. At Franklin High School, caught on camera vandalizing a Starbucks with pro-Hamas graffiti. And I'm not even going to get into the bang situation. I know somebody's going to ask me to talk about it, but I'm trying to be undivided today. It's getting harder and harder with this absolute ridiculousness that people will not respond to with a grain of common sense. So anyway, she's caught red-handed. I mean, and then she's like, I don't think it's graffiti at all, writing on there. So Ori Hoffman gets a statement from Seattle Public Schools, and this just angers me to no end because we're always hit by this wall. Whenever we have clear cases of misconduct by public school teachers, we've got the evidence, we've got the receipts, we take it to the school, and what do they say? You guys know what they say? We're not going to comment on personnel matters. In this instance, they did say to Ori Hoffman, Seattle Public Schools does not condone vandalism, including unauthorized graffiti, on public or private property. SPS will not be commenting on this personnel matter. Now, you might take that to say, okay, well, they said they don't condone vandalism, so isn't that maybe them saying they're going to do something about it? Well, not necessarily, because remember the story I told you about, he came back up in the news recently, but about a Seattle high school teacher who I met him back in 2020. He was harassing news crews and leading students on a protest when they stormed the King County jail. And then he's coming out and he's done all these other things. Well, back in 2020, when he had, you know, stormed the King County jail with these students and was got his hand in the face of news cameras, we reached out to SPS and they said, well, we, you know, support everyone's First Amendment rights, including the media, and we don't condone it. But then he still has his job because he came back up. I can't remember what was the, oh, he came back up in the news a couple months ago because he was the guy who did, failed his student on a quiz because the student said like only males have penises. But what was the other thing he did? It was like in combination with that. It was a back-to-back story. Gosh, what was it? It was multiple. Anyway.
I'm looking it up.
Okay, you're looking it up. So we knew in 2020 that this teacher was a problem. In fact, he had a criminal record out of Portland and had other arrests that didn't result in prosecution, but for, I would say, protest-adjacent activities. It was clear by kind of his record and his arrest that these had to do with acts of civil disobedience. So you had this guy who was clearly a problem. Seattle Public Schools suggested in 2020 that they didn't agree with what he did, but they wouldn't comment on personnel matters, only to find out 3 years later, he's still engaged in absolutely ridiculous behavior where he shouldn't be. Oh, I know what he was doing. He was putting these pro-Hamas posters outside his classroom. And he was on his Facebook talking about how Hamas didn't rape anybody. And so it was this string of stories in the course of a week. So when they say, oh, we don't condone vandalism, they've got evidence of this teacher doing it, and they say, we're not going to comment on a personnel matter. Well, in 3 years, I wonder what this teacher will be doing. Because the exact same thing happened with that Seattle public school teacher from 2020 to 2023. They didn't do anything about it. So there was a second instance. Remember we played this video for you on the show yesterday? It showed... obviously, what I said at the time was someone who was part of the protest because they're marching with them, they're chanting with them, they're celebrating the fact that, oh, we had hundreds of people show up and we were able to walk off without arrest and how it was a great thing and they were claiming victory. Well, it turns out that is actually a Seattle public school teacher as well. According to Ori Hoffman, he goes by multiple names, James Whitney Conn Parker, a.k.a. James Parker, a.k.a. Whitney Conn, a.k.a. James Whitney Conn, a.k.a. Benjamin Ovitz. Who needs that many aliases, you know, unless you're what? Oh, a criminal, which it turns out you are. Mm-hmm. Says Ari Hoffman says, Whitney is yet another pro-Hamas teacher for Seattle Public Schools. He bragged about shutting down I-5 on Saturday for a rally to support terrorists. And again, shutting down I-5 is a crime. So by being there, by videotaping it, by putting it out there publicly, you are acknowledging that you committed a crime. Now, you might think it's for a worthy cause, but there is a clear, bright line between First Amendment protected activity and criminal civil disobedience. So you've got in over the weekend, and I'm sure there are more, but two examples on camera of Seattle public school teachers blatantly violating the law. And we're supposed to want those people around kids, especially in the example of the first teacher, Lauren Holloway, a special education teacher. That is not someone with the temperament for a job like that. I remember very vividly, it never ceases to amaze me the types of work that these types of activists do. Well, first, I'm always surprised when they do have a job because they're at so many different things. I'm like, how could you possibly be employed? But remember at CHOP when my crew was mobbed? Yes. For like 20 to 30 minutes at CHOP, we had to seek refuge in a fire station. One of the most vicious members of that mob was telling me that she was a psychiatrist. And I'm like, I'm thinking you're a psychiatrist? Like, I don't know. Where do you get your help then? Because you're obviously mentally unstable. So you've just got these people living among us, doing jobs that they have no business in the world doing. So we'll also follow up with the Seattle Public School District to see if we can't get them to give us a little bit more information on what the next steps are when you have, maybe just vaguely, maybe we just pose the question in a vague manner. When you have a teacher and there's a documented instance of them breaking the law, what steps does the Seattle Public School District take to make sure that that teacher is held accountable and that they should be around students? So I made this the subject of our daily show poll for subscribers this morning on Patreon and Locals, because specifically I was curious if you are as frustrated as I am with that constant retort from the public school district when we bring them, you know, a clear case of misconduct from a teacher, are they going to do anything about it? So I asked, upon request, should public schools in Washington be required to release information on teacher disciplinary action without requiring the requester to file a PDR, yes or no? And why I think that's important is, you know, they could put you through the public disclosure system. You know, I don't even know if they would say that things are exempt and black it out. But to me, in my opinion, and I'll get to your guys' opinions in a moment, I don't understand why we would be okay with any employee in any part of government who's paid by taxpayers being shielded in that way. If there was a case of misconduct that resulted in discipline, and be it a parent, a fellow teacher, a member of the media, a member of the public whose tax dollars are going to fund education, if they want to know what the outcome of that discipline was, they should be able to send an email and be told. Those are our kids that we're sending into those schools, schools that are being run with our money. Why would we have to jump through hoops or be blocked from knowing what happened to a teacher who was accused of disciplinary issues? George says, licensing information, including disciplinary action, is available online for healthcare providers. Why not teachers? Exactly. I get it for healthcare providers. If you want to know if someone's had issues, like if I'm going to go see this doctor for a surgery or whatever it is, and they've got all these complaints against them or findings of misconduct, yeah, we should know that. But a lot of those medical providers, they're in private practice, and we still get that information. Public teachers? Why is it hidden? Why are we told we're not going to comment on personnel matters? J. Thomas Peterson says, in financial services, disciplinary action is public record. The details may be hidden for a wide variety of reasons, and if they are, a records request can be made. So again, other aspects of government, it's obviously the teachers' union, right? This is obviously the power of the WEA and what they're able to negotiate and hide bad teachers behind a cloak of secrecy. Absurdity. Kyle says, disagrees. He says, I'm leaning no, but I'm assuming a reasonable response time to PDRs and a simple enough process that any parent could do it. I've never submitted a PDR, so I don't know if that's realistic. My guess is that it's not, though. It is a public record, but there should be a record of who's asking. Yeah, so I understand what you're saying there, that, you know, if you want this information, you should have to file some sort of formal request so your information's on the record so the person it's about knows, like, hey, here's who's asking for information about me. The issue is exactly what you pointed out there. PDRs can be laborious. They can be very time intensive when it comes to the process of getting that information back. I mean, look, we had to sue the city of Seattle over a PDR that should have been lickety split, that took months and months and months, and now we're in the middle of this lawsuit about it. So I would tend to agree with you if it were that simple. If it were, hey, I filed a PDR, the information is obviously readily available, so just send it back to me, but we can't rely on that. And there's nothing in the law that dictates how quickly they need to respond to a public disclosure of that kind. E says, as a public servant, your info becomes public, whether you want it to or not. Your identity can get stolen because of it, so disciplinary action should be just as transparent. And if we care about our kids and who's teaching our kids, this should be easy information for parents to access. I'm not even as worried about the media. We should have access to it too. But a parent should be able to get that issue, no problem at all. All right. I want to dive into something that happened on the opening day of the legislative session. I have sat through a lot of floor speeches, and gosh, are they boring. You know, lawmakers talking about the bill that they're introducing, why they're for it or against it. Some of it is just, you know, behind the scenes, how the sausage is made stuff. But there was a speech given yesterday by Representative Drew Stokesbury. He's the House Republican leader. And it was sort of a beginning of the session speech where he's laying out the priorities of his caucus. But I got to say, it was a masterclass in problem solving. Because, you know, it's one thing when you're in the minority and you've been in the minority as long as Republicans have in this state. It's one thing for you to just complain about how the majority is handling issues. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. You should. We do, certainly. But it's one thing to do that. It's another thing to say, hey, like, here is what's going wrong. Here is why it's going wrong. And here's how we're proposing to fix it. And that's really what we need more of. Because, and I'll play several cuts, because I really want to show how important it is. And he lays out really some of the issues far better than I ever could. So again, Representative Drew Stokesbury, he starts by talking about how great the state of Washington is, but acknowledging that we have some deepening crises on our hands.
Despite everything Washington has going for, Madam Speaker, I'm afraid that we are confronting a catalog of crises here in Washington state. In too many ways, the state seems to be going in the wrong direction. We have the fourth highest homeless rate. At one point last year, had the highest price of gas of any state in the country, and Seattle has the ninth most expensive cost of living of any city in the country. We have the fourth highest combined sales tax rate. We set a new record for violent crime in 2023 and are number two in the country for property crime. We're the fourth most expensive state to buy a home. We saw the largest increase in fentanyl deaths, and 70% of our students are failing math standards while 50% are failing reading standards.
Those are facts. He lays them out clearly, succinctly. These are problems we're facing. This is where Washington stands compared to the rest of the nation on these critical issues. So he starts by laying out indisputable facts. And then he goes on to say, not only do we obviously care about these issues in the minority. Not only are we obviously going to point out these failures, but citizens care about these things too.
The issues that I listed just now are exactly the same ones in the same order that respondents in last week's Crosscut Elway poll said were the most important issues the legislature has to confront this session. Homelessness, cost of living, taxes, crime, housing, drugs, the economy, and education. We must fix these crises. We must fix Washington. I recognize it's easy for a minority caucus to stand up here and do nothing more than criticize the majority's solution. Tautologically speaking, you don't actually need the minority's votes to pass to be part of the governing majority. But, Madam Speaker, House Republicans here in Washington want to help resolve the numerous crises facing our state. Most of our constituents don't care if something is a Democratic idea or a Republican idea. They just want good ideas.
So now he's established a common goal. Something that should unite everyone. Democrats, Republicans, the citizenry at large. Fixing these crises, regardless of who gets credit for it. Recognizing that in the minority, they can't do these things on their own. And that they're more than happy to bring good ideas to the table and have Democrats steal them for all they care. As long as the problems get solved. And then he goes through in detail. Again, it's one thing to complain about it. It's one thing to point out that, hey, citizens want this done, but what are you doing? What are your ideas, Representative Drew Stokesbury and Republicans?
Over the past 5 years, criminal activity has exploded in Washington. Homicide is up 96% since 2019. We rank number three for automobile theft, number two for property crime, and number one for retail theft of all states in the country. 61% of violent crime in Washington now goes unsolved. And that's perhaps not surprising considering that we rank 51st behind every state and the District of Columbia in police officers per capita. We need to provide recruitment and retention bonuses to local law enforcement agencies to improve both manpower and morale. We should toughen penalties for concealment and organized retail theft, two topics that Representative Griffey has been working on for years, so that law enforcement has the tools to go after property crime. And most importantly, we should bring to the floor House Bill 1363, which has dozens of co-sponsors between both of our caucuses, that would reinstate the vehicular pursuit laws so that police can track down and catch the perpetrators of these crimes.
Identifies the problem, recommends solutions, gives specific bills that would push those solutions through. if they have the help of the majority party. He also laid out a similar problem-solving method for the drug crisis.
Representative Mossbrecher has introduced legislation that would enhance the penalties for fentanyl distribution to reduce the flow of illegal drugs in our community. Representative Maycumber is working on a bill to create a Bureau of Narcotics within the Washington State Patrol to fight sophisticated drug trafficking rings that operate across local government jurisdictional boundaries. And Representative Graham has a bill that would make it a crime to expose children and vulnerable adults to fentanyl and other controlled substances.
Representative Stokesbury did the same thing when it came to the weight of taxes and challenges for the working class.
Representative Connors has a bill that would provide some of the CCA surplus revenue as rebates to Washington drivers to offset the high price of gas they paid last year. Washington State also remains one of the only states in the entire country to have not passed broad-based tax relief since COVID. And this will be the first and hopefully last time, Madam Speaker, I implore you to follow the lead of states like California and New York. But I hope that we follow their lead and pass broad-based tax relief. Representative Orcutt has a bill to create a 0.5% sales tax reduction, which will primarily benefit lower class families.
He didn't stop there. He also talked about ideas that his caucus will be pushing to help with the affordable housing crisis.
To that end, Representative Cheney has introduced legislation that would incentivize landlords to voluntarily lower or freeze rents to create a more stable and affordable housing stock through a new tax credit program. Representative Connors has a bill to provide down payment assistance to nurses, firefighters, police, child care workers, and other critical professions to make sure that they're able to move to our state and afford a home. And Representative Jacobson has introduced a bill drawn from her experience on the Puyallup City Council that would authorize cities and counties to create a streamlined permit process to make it more easy to build affordable housing in communities that so desperately need it.
Problem, solutions. Problem, solutions. Finally, he did it for education.
Over the past few years, public schools have lost 60,000 students, which suggests that a number of Washington families are not satisfied with the education they're receiving. Representative Rood, I'm proud to share, is working on legislation that would put tutors in every school and fund more paraeducators to provide high-dosage tutoring to get our kids back on track. Representative Corey has proposed a bill to fund literacy coaches in elementary school, prioritizing low-income students and those that have fallen furthest behind their peers, because we know that third-grade reading ability is often a leading indicator of later academic success or failure. Last session, this body passed a bill from Representative McIntyre that would have created a new grant program to help school districts in economically disadvantaged areas build new schools. Because all kids, regardless of their zip code, regardless of their area, deserve access to a world-class education system. We should pass that bill again this session. And we should not be so vain, Madam Speaker, as to insist that public schools are the only environment worthy of our support.
And let me ask you this, for someone who is maybe not inclined to believe that Republicans bring anything to the table, that they only complain and don't offer solutions, did any of the bills that Representative Drew Stokesbury talked about there, that his caucus is going to introduce on public safety, the drug crisis, helping the working class with taxes, affordable housing, education, did any of them sound extremist to you? Did any of them sound unreasonable to you? Did any of them sound like something that's unnecessary or that wouldn't possibly help some of these crises that we have in our state, which are undeniable? They're simply based on the data, again, which Representative Drew Stokesbury laid out in detail before he gave the rest of his remarks.
So over the next 60 days, Madam Speaker, I hope that we have the honesty to admit when we were wrong and the humility to be willing to try new approaches. And meanwhile, we must avoid the hubris to think that good intentions are a sufficient condition for good policies. So I'll end where I began. Washington State is full of potential, and none of us would be here if we didn't think we could help. But there's a catalog of crises confronting our great state. It's time for a change, Madam Speaker. Let's fix Washington.
And I think what I like the most, you said there is good intentions are not a replacement for good ideas. Good intentions are not a replacement for actual measurable progress. You cannot argue with the fact that we have not had measurable progress on the drug crisis. Quite the opposite. We have not had measurable progress on the mental health crisis. Quite the opposite. We have not, as a result, had measurable progress on the homelessness crisis. Quite the opposite. We have not had measurable progress on the affordability crisis. Quite the opposite. And we certainly have not had measurable progress on education, regardless of what standards you use. Enrollment is down. The number of kids regularly attending class is down. Test scores are way, way down. So I think for Washingtonians and what Representative Drew Stokesbury did a very effective job at laying out there, I think for Washingtonians, that is the pitch about why we need balance in government. Good ideas, very clearly, based on our track record and where we find ourselves, cannot be made in an echo chamber. If you're grading your own test, you're going to give yourself an A every time. Democrats keep patting themselves on the back and giving themselves A's while our state falls deeper and deeper into crisis. They must work with the minority party, go through some of these ideas, and try something new. God forbid they need to share a little bit of the credit. And hey, take it all. I am confident that Republicans don't care. Democrats, your ideas haven't worked. Go ahead. Take the minority party's ideas, run with them, and if they work, take credit for it, for all I care. But the best ideas are made when the most amount of people are around the table with a diverse viewpoint. And I just, again, give credit to Representative Stokesbury for how clearly he laid that out. Okay, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, UW has a racist mentorship program. We'll get to that, talking about the absolute downfall of education. But first, I've been urging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Not only is it important if you want to, I don't know, save money on insurance in the new year, maybe you need more insurance or better insurance. That was the case for Mike and I. All of those things are great. All those things are important. But this is a really good climate to have someone in your back, in the insurance industry, because crime is up. Whether you're a homeowner who has to file a claim on your car or something, or your property because you've been targeted, or you own a business, that can lead insurance companies to drop you just like that, because it's happening so much and they have to look out for their bottom line. So Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says having a professional who has multiple insurance companies they can go to for you really makes a difference.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right? For a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker, because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, and if you're doing this all on your own and you file a claim and you get dropped, I mean, man, that's a difficult situation to try to navigate on the phone to different insurance companies. Dave Taylor and First Mark Insurance, they've been doing this for a long time in this area. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. The very best part of it is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, the University of Washington apparently hasn't learned its lesson when it comes to racist hiring practices and the like. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Special treatment on the basis of race is racist. Special treatment on the basis of race is racist. As we talk about all the time on this show, I mean, identitarianism is a plague on society, but we are coming absolutely full circle, trying to make up for mistakes of the past by creating new mistakes in the present, and discriminating against people on the basis of race, typically in these instances with DEI programs, because someone is white. They might not get the same sort of help in advancing their career, even if they have similar factors that might be holding them back. I mean, you know, one of the things in kind of diversity efforts that is always left out is economic diversity. I mean, is actually looking at, okay, skin color, gender be damned, what is that person's economic situation? What kind of opportunities did that afford them or not afford them in their life? Because white people and black people can both grow up in poverty. White people and black people can both grow up in broken homes. White people and black people could both be raised in environments where they didn't have an opportunity to seek out higher education. They didn't have an opportunity to do unpaid internships or apprenticeship programs. So the idea that someone's skin color, literally the pigmentation of their skin, would make them more in need of programs to advance their career is not only ridiculous and short-sighted, it is in fact racist. Not only against white people, but also people of color. The soft bigotry of low expectations that you think because of their skin color that they need extra help to get somewhere and a white person doesn't. It's absurdity. I don't know how we got to this point in society. So the university, wow, did you hear that breath?
I did.
Talk so much without breathing. It's also just so hot in here. Is it my sweater?
It might be your sweater.
With a turtleneck?
Yeah. Strangling you over there.
Sweating over here. Sweating. So the University of Washington, which recently there was this whole big issue because they blatantly hired someone on the basis of race and then got in trouble for it, which is a different issue altogether, but kind of in the same DEI vein. So the University of Washington, this was sent to us. They announced their BIPOC Professional Staff Mentorship Program, seeking mentors and mentees. The UW Professional Staff Organization DEI Committee is excited to announce a brand new initiative to advance mentorship opportunities across the University of Washington, only if you're not white. However, applications open Monday, January 8th. To join the first cohort of this unique program, the BIPOC Staff Membership Program is a pilot project that has been introduced by the Professional Staff Organization DEI Committee and will be funded by the Diversity Seed Grant for the 2024 academic year. This program will provide BIPOC staff with the structural support necessary to develop professional skills to advance their careers and build community over several months through individualized mentorship. Blah, 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 blah. All I say with these, and all I go back to, if you changed it and you replaced the word BIPOC with white, would it be acceptable? Of course not. It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable if it said white. If it's not acceptable if it said BIPOC, that is not supposed to be what the United States is about. That's not supposed to be what higher education is about. I do not deny that for a long time in this country, we treated Black people very, very poorly. We robbed them of their opportunity to build generational wealth. That does not change the fact that today in America, you can also have white people who need a little bit of extra help because of their circumstances to get ahead professionally. The skin color does not dictate that. And what I really think needs to happen here, if UW wants to be successfully sued twice, I think that some white staff members should apply for those grants and apply for mentoring and have them be rejected on the basis of race. Because we go back to what we said at the beginning with these protests that are happening on I-5, which may be the only solution since politicians don't have a backbone, since they control the police and what the police do, that you have to have people who are caught in the backup who just sue. I'm starting to believe that that's the only way out of all of this craziness, is to force lawsuits upon these institutions. Make them defend in a court of law a BIPOC professional staff mentorship program. Sign up for it. Someone do this for us. Sign up for it. Applications opened on Monday, yesterday, to join the first cohort of this unique program. I don't think anywhere in here it explicitly says that you have to be a member of the BIPOC community, but it's in the name. So what would they do as a white staff member if you apply for it? If someone's willing to do that, please do. Let us know what happens, because I'm sure you're going to be rejected. Now, whether they blatantly tell you it's because you're white, I'm not sure. But if they do, well, then you got a case on your hands. All right, we'll dip outside Washington State coming up next. First, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. What, Nicole?
Oh, no, I was just going to say there's more to the email, and you must identify as BIPOC.
Oh, it's cut off here. So you do have to identify as BIPOC. That's just racist then.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand how that's allowed for.
Right.
So if you're white, apply for it. Did you get sent that from a UW staffer?
Yes.
Yeah.
As a listener, viewer.
If you're white, respond to them and say, are you willing to test this theory of ours?
Okay.
Because it's just absurd.
Yes.
You just replace it. That's how we decide, based on a common sense perspective, whether something is racist. If you swap out white for black, white for BIPOC, would it be allowed? If the answer is no, then the other one can't be allowed either. Okay? Sound like Inslee there. I need to get that video cut of Inslee.
Okay.
All right, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Nicole, did you see my delicious lunch I brought today?
It smelled good.
Eastside Weight, well, you don't like mushrooms, but Eastside Weight Loss Clinic approved. I made this great, like, chicken with all these mushrooms that had just been cooked down and these really soft, like, cauliflower. And it was like this delicious stew. Cauliflower. What do you call it?
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower?
Cauliflower.
Cauli.
What did you say it again?
Cala. Cauliflower.
No, I'm correct.
Cauliflower.
I'm correct. You're wrong. We'll let the listeners decide. Anyway, and that's one of the things I love about Eastside Weight Loss. There's no prepackaged meals, so you get to make your own meals. You get to eat real food. You can have whatever sort of diversity, I think that word's stuck in my mind, that you want. And I can make some really creative things that go right along with the program that are just delicious. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I've lost 37 pounds. There's no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. We've had a lot of viewers and listeners who have found tremendous success on the program themselves. The nice thing is you drop weight like that. Any excess weight you have, man, that's gonna be gone 2-3 months. That's what I experienced and what others have experienced as well. And then they help you craft a plan to keep it off for life in a way that doesn't feel like you're on a lifelong diet. And isn't that what we all want? EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation. Whoo, good thing we're coming to the end of the show because I'm about to take my shirt off. I am steaming.
Wow, we might get some extra viewers.
Yeah. And there's not a lot on under it. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Jodie Foster. Oh, I'm now a renewed Jodie Foster fan. I suppose I was. You know, she's got some good movies, but now even more so. Jodie Foster speaking out about Gen Z, how they're whiny and disrespectful and lazy. That's what Nicole wrote in
here.
That was
my paraphrasing.
That's Nicole's paraphrasing. Here's the article from CNN. Jodie Foster describes what she finds really annoying about working with Gen Z. Let's see if this sounds right. They're really annoying, especially in the workplace, Foster said. They're like, nah, I'm not feeling it today. I'm gonna come in at 10:30 a.m. Or in emails, I'll tell them, this is all grammatically incorrect. Did you not check your spelling? And they're like, why would I do that? Isn't that kind of limiting? 100%. That sounds like Gen Z. Although I'm worried that we're all slowly creeping toward sort of being Gen Z-esque. There are words that I type in to an email that it doesn't matter how many times I try. I am never close enough for spell check to come up with a suggestion. Do you ever have that where you're like, I can't even get close enough with this word that spell check will give me even a suggestion.
Right, because they can't even narrow it down.
Because they can't even narrow it down based on how bad I have spelled this. And that's just laziness because we're relying so much on technology to do things for us. So now you got Gen Z. They're just typing LOL, smiley, heart face, fire, whatever it is. And then they're doing their homework with AI. And we're just raising a bunch of dum-dums. And then they're going to Seattle Public Schools and they're going to be dum-dums and activists as well.
Yep.
And they're going to have an unhinged belief that based on the color of their skin, they're either evil or great. They're either held up or held down.
Right. And we went to school back in the day when they actually did teach spelling.
Yes.
I had to take typing.
But it's still being trained out of us.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. There's like, that's the least of the priorities sometimes, I think.
But I mean, the next 10, 20 years, they're really going to be a doozy. America's place in the world is just going to absolutely rapidly decline because we're so focused on all this ridiculousness. And over in China, they're like militant. And not saying we need to be China, but
we don't teach the priorities. So yes, you can have all these side interests. You can have all of these extra projects, but let's focus on smarts.
Well, and you don't have to, okay, like penmanship. I think that's a nice thing. I enjoy getting one of the last things I have from Dory that I will not get rid of is I took him out. We went out for dinner on his birthday, his last birthday. And a couple days later, I get this beautifully written card in the mail from Dory.
Yep.
And I was like, I love that. Now I cherish it because it's like the last thing he sent me. But I also got one from my aunt thanking me for the Christmas gift I brought her and wishing Mike and I a happy new year. And I love that. That being said, is it really a necessary is probably one of those that I can't necessary. A necessary skill for kids these days? How often are they going to be required to actually have, like, penmanship?
Well, I think it's a necessary skill for, you know, being a well-rounded human in the world. So, yes, that's not necessary for, you know, computer science degrees and programming, whatever. But will it make you a more well-rounded person and more socially Intelligent?
Capable?
Yes.
Sure. I just don't think, there are some things where it's like, okay, maybe the world has changed enough where you don't have to spend a lot of time on that, but you do have to be able to write out a grammatically correct email.
Yes.
And be able to hit send without embarrassing your company that you work for. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you do have to care about it. I love the Jodie Foster line, though. They respond by saying, why would I do that? Isn't that kind of limiting? Limiting what? Spelling something correctly and grammatically correct is limiting? Yeah, limiting your future career prospects. And that's
yes.
about it.
There you go.
Right. Okay, before we get to questions and comments from the live stream, which I'm sure we've had someone make a decision on whether I say cauliflower incorrectly because you guys like to judge me based on my regional dialect. And I think that's incredibly discriminatory, to be honest. Okay, we talked about the economy and sort of your retirement portfolios, what to look out for. Be very suspicious in 2024 about what politicians and the media are telling you. We also wanted to take a look at 2024 and the real estate market and how the election and the desire of the party in power to make you believe that everything is just great, what impact that might have on the real estate market. We asked our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com.
Well, my expectation is that rates are going to come down. The Fed is telling us they are going to. It is an election year. I would have expected that to happen, even if the Fed wasn't talking about it. And if it wasn't interest rates, it'd be something else. It'd be tax credits, first-time tax credits, something, you know, something else, some other type of incentive to spark housing because, you know, come November, they're going to want people feeling good about the economy. And, you know, I listened to, you know, Zach Abraham, you know, one of your other guys, really smart dude. And, you know, he has concerns about the economy, you know, that are not going to be controllable. But what can you control? You can control housing to a certain degree. And if they can put pressure down on interest rates, allow more transactions to happen, it's going to make people feel better.
Did he just shout out Zach Abraham? Wow, look at this cross promotion between our advertisers. But one of the differences here when Wes Jones talks about sort of the impact the presidential election could have on real estate and the Fed reducing rates, if, you know, the politicians lie about stuff and it gets you to change your retirement portfolio, that's devastating for someone. Now, if the Feds artificially decrease interest rates and you go out and buy a house at that interest rate, like, you've locked it in, so you're kind of a beneficiary of the Fed doing Biden's dirty work for him during an election year. So anyway, Wes Jones is a great source of advice. In fact, we were chatting, we just had him in yesterday to talk about this. And if you're thinking, okay, if the rates are coming down, now is a good time for me to talk about putting my home on the market because I've been holding off, reach out to him as early as possible so he can give you that market analysis and you can go through and he can look at what your home might need because if he's got 3 to 6 months like leeway time, that's going to be best for him. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream. I was just going to make a joke about something. Now I can't remember what it was. Matt Gilbert gave me $10 for the swear jar. Thank you. Oh, because he swore in the chat. What did he say? Also on Sundays with Subscribers, Brandy said that she had, Brandy said that she said that 10 chickens died for her wings order. So that means she either ate 40 wings or 20 full wings. So proud of her. Wait. Okay. So I was saying on, for some reason it came up on Sundays with Subscribers that whenever I get chicken wings, I look down and I try to figure out like how many chickens died for my meal.
Yes.
I guess they only have, oh man, I don't want to sound dumb. They only have 2 wings, right?
Correct.
And then they've got the 2 little hinders that yes. also are served as wings.
Thighs.
But they're served with their the wings, right?
Yes.
So I thought only it would only really be 2 per chicken. Is he counting it as 4 per
I think
four?
He was taking you literal as the wing girl. And he's saying that if 20 chicken died, that would be 40 wings.
Yeah, I can't smash 40, but I could do 2 dozen. It's not a lot of meat.
40.
It's not a lot of meat. But anyway, actually, Matt, keep that in mind.
I actually believe in you. I think you can
because,
do 40.
Because that comment is going to become very relevant for our closing sanity check.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. Country Guy says, seriously, the shirt's about to come off. Country Guy says, I'm going to have my trolls on Twitter being like, oh, now I know why Brandy's podcast is so successful. She talks about getting naked during her show. Yeah. Country Guy says, I remember protesting the Vietnam War. We got tear gassed. We survived. Yeah. And I would also wonder, back then, the police were a little more heavy-handed on peaceful protesters. So I'm curious, Country Guy, if your protest against the Vietnam War, you broke any laws during it that got you tear gassed, because that would be a difference. Kyle T says, come on, Brandy, you know the real danger to our roads is young white males. We played this clip. Still nothing from Representative Jake Fye's office. I put out this clip of him saying that, like, the lawlessness on our streets is attributable to young white males having a cultural issue of video gaming too much, which is that probably some of it? Sure. But you're really going to boil down all the lawlessness on our roadways to young white males who play too much video games? That's an insane statement that there is absolutely no factual data to back up. And I don't know if it was you, Kyle, or someone else, but someone forwarded me an email. They've reached out because Representative Fai is their representative. They've reached out to ask him to clarify his comments. So if they get a response before us, they'll send it to us. Keith Stone says, you can get thrown off Facebook for saying female dog. Oh, that's why I'm paying into this swear jar. Teresa Jean says, the two teachers you have shown today are great examples of why parents are pulling their kids out of public schools. I could not agree more. Kathy says, Undivided should be a mandatory class for all seniors in high school in the state. I actually disagree. I don't need, high school seniors don't need my political opinions thrust upon them. We need to keep that out of education, although mine are obviously correct. TZ Burton says, I boycott Starbucks because they sold the Sonics. That's a perfectly reasonable reason to boycott.
I thought so too. I thought
but
that
why
was much more reasonable.
Is Howard Schultz Jewish? Will you Google that? So is that why they're boycotting Starbucks? And if that's so, then isn't that just anti-Semitic? I think he is Jewish. Google that for me. Because then that's just blatant anti-Semitism, like in New York where they were protesting the bakery simply because it had a Jewish owner, where it's like, that's just hating Jewish people. Is he Jewish?
Jewish parents, yes. And Jewish, yeah, yes.
That gives it a whole new meaning, frankly. And now that's just, that goes from angering me to absolutely being disgusting. Because what other reason? Why would Starbucks? That makes no sense. Bad person. Teaching your kids. All right, Carlene Heath says, the school system has gone so far down the drain. No wonder our kids fail miserably in the basics, but are fluent in all the brainwashing ideologies. Todd Welch says, Rep. Sam Lowe has a bill to criminalize using drugs around people, giving law enforcement more ability to arrest or make contact with those using drugs on public transit or at the stops, which I think is great because, again, our government wants to convince us that it isn't hurting our health to be sitting on a public bus where people are blowing fentanyl and meth into our faces. You really think that we are that stupid? That makes no sense. Insane brainwashing. That being said, like, all of that good, I do think that we can save lives by taking a harder line on public drug use and not letting people just kill themselves with a needle in their arm or their leg on our sidewalks. But I do agree with what Representative Stokesbury said when Nicole wasn't playing cuts too early.
It was a dramatic pause.
Oh my gosh. I'm just kidding. That they need to go after the drug dealers. We need to do more to do that. I mean, that is, those are the people who you're trafficking in 10,000 fentanyl pills into our state. You're saying you don't care if 10,000 of our citizens die. You should be in prison for the rest of your life. So that's who we really need to be throwing the book at. Not to say we need to be hands off with people who are using drugs. Minerva Lona? Myron Valona? Yeah, it's hard when it's all smushed together. Yes, Nicole is definitely right on the pronunciation. For the Washington part of the country. Okay, I'm still going to say cauliflower. Keith says, my family's from Minnesota. We've always said cauliflower. Exactly. It's like, what do you call it when something's diagonal from you? What corner?
Kitty corner.
Oh, I say kitty corner too. Some people say catty corner.
Catty corner. Yes, yeah,
I don't
say catty corner.
Gary says, Nicole for the W. Whenever you guys compliment Nicole, then that's all she does. That's all she does is she puts in the comments,
it was
Nicole is correct.
There's one down
Sally
there.
Sally says, Nicole is right. Mo says, Nicole is correct. Sue says, she just needs that. Like, she just needs that affirmation.
A little bit.
Brandy says, cauliflower, like Adam Driver in the movie Logan Lucky. Thomas Brandelson says, short eye and cauliflower, not long eye. Okay, I'm glad we have settled the great call. I'm still going to say it. The one word I was willing to change because I didn't want to offend people. Now I don't care so much if I offend people in Portland. But I said Oregon.
Wait, you said Oregon, you mean?
No.
Oh.
Wait. No, Oregon. Wait.
That's right.
Oregon.
You said Oregon back in the day. Midwest.
Yes,
people
yes. Okay,
used
you're
to
right.
Say Oregon.
I said Oregon. And when I was told it was pronounced organ, I said, that's weird because that sounds like a body part.
Right.
And so I was always like, it's the Oregon Trail. And so my first boss is like, you cannot say Oregon. I remember him coming into the studio like, hey, it's Oregon. It's not Oregon. I'm like, okay. So I will change that because that's
just incorrect.
I feel like
when you say that one, you get hooked on it. Like, that's all you would hear.
Mm-hmm.
You describing, I guess. But yeah.
Yes. I'm well, because my dad used to say, you know, boys, they put their hands down their pants. You know, this is the thing, right?
Okay.
Like my little brother, he's going to hate me for this. He'd always have his hands down his pants when he was a kid.
Lots of boys, yes.
And my dad was like, take your hand off your organ. And so I associated that word with male genitalia. And so I'm like, you want me to say organ? I was like, that's super strange.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, oh my gosh, we're 10 minutes late. Mm-hmm. I'm burning up. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check. Speaking of the decline in the intelligence of Gen Z and the next generation, this is an article from Campus Reform. Animals are victims of human supremacy, a growing student organization says. This is the name of the organization. Students opposing speciesism. Students opposing speciesism. Can you imagine your kid comes home from college? Hey, did you get involved in any students groups? Yeah, students opposing speciesism. It says, speciesism is defined by SOS as, quote, the belief that all other animal species are inferior to humans. But SOS seeks to change it to all animals deserve equal respect and consideration. It's their website states, in the ways that matter the most, animals and people are all the same. So this is like a fringe offshoot of what, PETA?
Right.
SOS.
I think it's connected to PETA. PETA endorses it.
Now,
but especially they identify in this article that they are especially concerned with embryos of fish, which seems interesting. And this article also points out that they don't say much about abortion. So embryos of humans, but...
Minor detail. I also like in this, like, they do realize that the animal kingdom also has a pecking order. And animals eat animals that eat animals that eat animals that eat insects and all of that. So there is just a natural hierarchy. Unless you're going to argue that animals should also not eat animals or other insects or fish or anything like that. And then the world as we know it would end. Although... one thing I thought about yesterday, which is interesting why we're talking about this today.
Uh-huh.
Would you trade a year of your life to give your cat 10 more years?
Cats live pretty long. I could see you doing that for a dog.
I would literally trade...
lots of people would do that for dogs.
A decade of my life to give my dog another decade.
I believe it.
100%.
Decade for decade, really?
Yeah.
Stop it.
I would. As long as it's my last decade.
Nonsense.
Oh, 100%. I won't even question it. I was just sitting there petting her yesterday with her little face. I'm like, I'd trade my life for yours.
Dogs do not get enough years. I absolutely
maybe I should join students opposing speciesism.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really value my dog's life as much as I value mine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, they're leaning more at the chickens and the fish embryos for some reason. But
hey, everybody's got to be passionate about something.
Yes. Exactly.
Some passions are just more insane
but
than others.
Again, like I pointed out when I put this in the show sheet, I just think that placating these children and continuing this takeover of universities, and it's just out of control, and this is why we're falling apart.
Leads to stuff like this.
Yeah.
All right, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Don't forget, go to undividedpod.com. Find out how you can support our show for just $5 a month as we help you navigate this legislative session and an important election year. You can also shop our merch store, undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We'll see you back in the live show tomorrow at noon.